Hey, everybody, it's Scott. Welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. We are very happy to be back, and we are on a roll. We have a really special episode for you today that I will get to in just 1 second. I know that I say that every week, but what can I say? We got a lot of cool things going on. We also have a lot of cool sponsors that are really fun to work with, and we are happy that they are part of the show. And some of them have been with us for quite a while. Some have even returned to the show, so it's really cool. We kind of got a nice little entrepreneur family here, and one of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building on Main Street. Manskirt Brewing is just a great place to go grab a pint. They just had their Irish Red and Irish Stouts on tap, among their other 8 seasonally inspired ales. They're also making a Mexican lager, which is derived from a German Vienna lager, kind of like a Dos Equis or a Corona. So go check out Manskirt. Go say hi to Joe in his Manskirt. Yes, that's correct. Give him some love on social media. That is Manskirt Brewing. Now, we are lucky enough to have 2 beer sponsors on this podcast, and the other one happens to be Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey, in another just really awesome industrial space turned into awesome brewery. You got to go check out. They have 16 beers rotating, something changing every Sunday, something in the ton every Tuesday, barrel programs, sour programs. A really great spot to go have a beer. Now, they just released Hornswoggle. Yes, that is correct. Hornswoggle, their New England-style IPA. And then this Sunday coming up, they're going to be releasing an all-new Passion Fruit Sour. Both sound awesome, and both I will be getting. So check out Demented Brewing. Now, Wolf Nation, WULF Nation, is a new apparel company. Wake up, live free, the world's next hottest and biggest designer brand. No matter what your goals are in life, as long as you are pursuing them, Wolf Nation is the brand for you. So go check them out at wolfnation.rocks. They're going to be introducing the spring wolf wear for both men and women. Also, wolf accessory hats, bags, mugs, etc. They are currently working off pre-order, so if you follow them on Instagram, DM them at Wolf Nation, or email them at wolf@wolfnation.com, and make sure to check them out on Twitter and Facebook. They're just putting out a lot of cool things, and they're ramping up for a big production. Let's put it that way. A lot of stuff coming out. So that is Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. Now, Susan Robb, she's a woman out of Toronto, Canada, and she works with a friend of hers, Kim Ward, out of Wisconsin. They've both been on the show before. They both help us get some really cool guests on the show. They have a very well-thought-out organization for a good cause, and that is in the Nepal Outreach Program. And what they are trying to do is empower a group of women and kids in Nepal by raising enough money to put the 14 kids into school for the first time and help a group of ladies start a sewing business where they make these beautiful quilts. 13 quilts have been made, shipped, and sold in 4 countries, and all proceeds go right back into the Nepal Outreach Program for the next phase of sustainability. So go check out their GoFundMe under Vimla, V-I-M-L-A, or check out Susan Robb on Twitter, and that's Robb, R-O-B-B. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Every week we play trivia in different beer bars and breweries all over New Jersey. Make sure you go check it out. You could be in last place, win prizes to said beer bars and breweries. So it's just a fun night out. There's a bonus item every week. Make sure to check it out. That is Trivia Revolution. Now, this week on the podcast, if you are a fan of Always Sunny, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I am pretty much obsessive over the show for years. It's just kind of my show I watch when I want to wind down. Just throw a couple episodes of Sunny on, and it's brilliant. I'm waiting for that new season to come out. Now, you know, if you know the show, you know Mac's parents. Mac has some very hilarious parents. One of them, Luther. And that is Greg Cummings. He's coming on the show. But we also were able to get Sandy Martin, who plays Mac's mom, who is also in the recent Oscar-winning film, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So a really fun podcast, not only just to get one of them, but to get them both on the same episode. So, guys, with that, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg Scott Cummings. I play the character of Luther on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I've just finished here with the two guys that here at Verbal Shenanigans, having a good time. Check it out.
Hey, this is Sandy Martin, and I'm having a wonderful time with Scott and Michael and Verbal What is it? Shenanigan. Well, you can't blame me because, you know, I'm an old fart. But listen, you'll enjoy the show. I had a good time talking about Max's mom. We had a good time talking about three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri. And, you know, I'm just sending you some pure turtle love.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cool and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Everybody, welcome back to another installment of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Very happy to be back, guys. It's Scott Brennan here. Did you hear before this all of our awesome sponsors? How fun is that? Guys, we're also part of the BS Podcast Network. Before we get going, a lot of cool podcasts on that network, so make sure to go check them out. I'm sweaty. I'm trying to do 30 runs in 30 days, and I'm currently on day 21 of it, so I'm almost there, but man, is it hard, especially for a guy that doesn't love running that much. This is what happens when you listen to Joe Rogan's podcast and you hear Cameron Haynes and guys like David Goggins on there, like, preaching about, you know, how to push themselves, and all of a sudden you're in this stupid thing, you know, running in the snow, running on sleet, and knees are hurting, back's hurting, but it is fun to push yourself to do something just a little bit different. Now, we're coming off an awesome week. Last week was just an episode that really kind of sums up some of the magic we've been able to have here on the podcast. Now, you might not hear Mike right now, and I'll get into that as we go. Last week was Mike's last episode face-to-face with me for a while. He has gone down to Georgia. And so last week I was able to kind of round up a surprise guest, and that was John Schneider, who was Bo Duke in the Dukes of Hazzard. And this was cool because it kind of came together last minute. We do a pretty good job of scheduling our guests out months ahead of time. Sometimes it takes a couple months to get these guys on and find times at work and whatnot. So it is kind of a hassle. And I was able to get John Schneider rather quickly. So I give thanks to his people who put it together quick. Because Mike was a big Dukes of Hazzard guy, so I didn't even tell him about it. So it really turned out to be a fun interview. So if it's your first time listening, go back an episode or two and check out some of the guests we had. But last week was really cool with John Schneider. And then we also had our good friend AJ Mattioli, who's been on several times, head of Mattioli Productions. Now, all right, so let's get right into it. We're going to call Mike. Don't worry, guys. The mic is not gone. I know some of you were like, please, Mike, be gone. Please, Mike, be gone. But let's face it, no one is really going to join me weekly and put up with my crap. And want to do this insanity every week and record hours and hours of themselves talking. So Mike's here to stay, guys. Mike is here. We're just going to have to do it via the information superhighway, a.k.a. the internet, and kind of have him. And he'll be visiting. We'll do some live podcasts here and there from different locations. So this is changing a little, but we are still rocking and rolling. We got a really fun episode planned for you today. So let's get Mike on the line here.
Yeah, hello.
Old friend of the podcast, guest on the show.
Oh, first time, long time.
I've been doing this 25 years. Make it the point. You're an idiot.
I'm just saying, I think the Cleveland Browns can win the Super Bowl this year.
You're crazy. You're an idiot.
Taylor is a great quarterback that they just picked up. I mean, they have plenty of draft picks.
Make who's screening these calls? This guy's an idiot. Next caller. But anyway, Mike, howdy from Georgia. Well, you're from Georgia. Howdy from Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So
living the peach life.
Does that make you a Georgian now?
I don't know. I don't think so. I've been more time in Jersey. I guess by rule, I'm still a Jerseyan until Georgia years take over.
Is that how that works? Like, if you live somewhere X amount of time, it's a year thing?
I don't know. I mean, if you go by where you're born, technically I'm a Pennsylvanian. I mean, yeah. Does it go by the length or the origination or?
Well, nothing with you goes by length. So.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I'm trying to Google hang out with you right now.
Oh, there you are. It's on mute, so we didn't get the echo.
Yeah, well, I still need to be able to see your thing. Well, maybe.
Let's, damn right, you need. Look at it.
Never mind.
Look at it.
Never mind. Hang that up. But, Mike, so I was just explaining a little bit. I was actually trying to fix sound stuff, so my intro was not very good. So I might have to record that again later. But coming off of John Snyder, a.k.a. Bo Duke, trying to make your dreams come true before you left. I hope that your dreams did come true.
Every night I just cried and I call my parents. I'm like, I made it, Dad. I did it.
Your son interviewed a Duke. David Duke? No. Bo Duke.
For you, Denver Pyle.
But next week we'll have David Duke on.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Then following week will be everybody who attended Duke University.
Yes. David Duke would not be really amazing there, bro. Maybe in Georgia. You're already changing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, just keeping the trend. You know, I got to fit in, Scotty. I mean, I got to go to new ways, you know?
Mike, is there a reason I went on onto our database and I can't find any of the episodes that involve people of color?
History's not important. The only certain history with flags with stars on it and an X, you know, stuff that really makes America great again.
So give us a little lowdown on your what about 14-hour trip, you said, something like that?
Yeah, I took off Friday night. I drove into the wee hours of the morning to get to Virginia.
What was the strategy? The strategy was to leave in the middle of the night, like to beat traffic, or like?
I kind of figured I want to try to get here on Saturday at a decent time. I mean, to try to set something up with the family, have everybody over. So I left on Friday night to get like to a halfway point and then go the rest of the route the following morning.
I was wondering why you didn't like leave like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 in the morning, like just got up early and went. I was curious as to why you shot out in the middle of the night.
Well, I just figure if I got to the halfway point, I can get some rest and still get here around the same time. I got like 4 hours of sleep. I mean, it wasn't bad the first half of the trip going down. It gets kind of boring. I mean, you're going through boring states like West Virginia.
You hear that, West Virginia? You hear that, West Virginia?
You're
boring. You're boring-ass state.
That's my hot take. I've kind of felt bad. I was listening to sports radio for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I would feel bad. I would feel bad too.
And I called in. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get on one of the shows and talk to the guy. And after it hung up, I'm like, all right, I'm going to listen to myself on the radio. The second I turned it over, I got out of the area and all I could hear was static.
Yes.
All I could hear.
What did you call in about? Like, hey, this is Mike. Go Phillies.
I asked his opinion on if they think Nick Foles will start if Carson Wentz is healthy for week one as one of those ceremonial, thanks for winning the Super Bowl, let's give you like the first series or something like that.
Right.
And then I told a story how I thought at one time that Wilt Chamberlain didn't score 100 points in his game. There was this show on HBO. It was like the not so great moments in sports history. And I didn't know at the time, I was like 6 or 7. They, along with it, they had like mock interviews, quote unquote, you know, just
right.
fake stuff they would make up. And one of the things they did was they, quote unquote, interviewed the scorekeeper at the famous game where he said, yeah, he only like scored 10 points and the game was over. And somebody came up to me. He's like, yo, George, you put an extra zero up there by accident. But everybody was going nuts about it. So we're like, we'll just roll with it.
And is that really true? He didn't score 100 points?
No, he did score it, but that was, they were basically asking for stories about what you thought was true as a kid, and then when you were an adult, you found out weren't true at all. Kind of like, you know, the thing about people think you swallowed like 20 some spiders in your lifetime. Yeah, while
or if you swallowed gum, it would like block your intestinal tract.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. And I kind of brought up that. I mean, you see it, and I'm like a sports kid growing up, so it's like, oh, I got a little inside information. I know a little bit more than everybody at school, and I'll just let me just drop knowledge. And then, like, a few years later, it's like, wait a minute, that don't sound right.
I like your strategy of let me just drop knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, I originated that term back in the day.
Oh, I can tell. And then,
that was the Burl's original.
And then you drank glitter beer.
Yeah, I eventually got there. As a side note, I tried to go to sleep at one of the rest areas. It's kind of impossible when your car is packed and you're 6'3" to try to fall asleep, and it's also 20 degrees outside. So, but yeah, I was.
So you were just like, I'll just go get drunk instead.
Well, I got some sleep, and as I was in like the hotel, I was looking at Facebook, and somebody put up this video of like this beer that they make, and apparently like the FDA recently approved like edible glitter, and some breweries are using it, and they listed some of the breweries. So I was just checking out the names. I'm just curious where they're at, and then I saw the one was like North Carolina. So I'm like,
North Carolina, you know, come on and raise up, take your shirt off, mm-hmm. and twist it around your head like a helicopter.
I didn't do that. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just drank
the
glitter beer.
I got to remind myself to get Petey Pablo on the podcast. I'm going to write myself a reminder. Anyway, go ahead. Carry on.
But it was just a whim. I mean, I saw that. I'm like, that's so silly and stupid. And then I'm like, that's nearby. Let's see how silly and stupid it was. And it was a great beer.
Now, how many hours were you driving at this point? About 10?
I would probably say that. I probably did 4 or 5 the night before. And then, I was probably 5 hours in when I got there.
I feel like a Milwaukee's Best would taste good after 10 hours of driving.
No. This had a flavor profile, but
glitter.
I mean, I wasn't that out of it. But
Did you poo glitter at all? Has there been an update?
I have yet to see the glitter come back out. I'll keep you posted. If I leave a little mark at 3 a.m., I'll be sure to call you if I say, hey, I don't need the lights on.
It's Monday, though. Like, I feel like that beer should have got through your digestion.
Well,
maybe you
like
peed
gum.
Glitter.
It's like gum. It either comes out quickly or stays in your system forever.
It would be great if you just farted and it's like, and like a giant cloud, like a sparkly cloud just rains in the, you know.
Yeah, that's how I enter a room.
Yeah, or you left like golden stains on the toilet.
Son, did you kill a stripper and put it down the toilet?
Not recently.
No, that's just the last time I was here.
About
a couple weeks since that happened.
So you stopped at a few breweries, made it down. What was that? What are like the feelings of like being, you know, done with Jersey? Pretty much, you're done for now.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be back for one quick trip in April, but I mean, it's not bugging me because I know I'll be coming back from time to time again. My sister still lives up there.
Yeah,
she's gonna be getting married. No date yet, so obviously I'll be making trips up there. Izzy has friends up there.
I'm getting married, but you're not invited. So,
I figure we'd schedule a podcast then. Scott, the guy broke the sleeping record again. Let's do it.
Side note, I'm not even kidding. Obi has been a... Those of you who don't know, Obi's the dog that barks all the time in the back of this podcast. All today, like, as I've been kind of setting up stuff and rearranging some things here because we don't really need as much space, he's been, like, whining at the door. Like, I don't know if that's... He thinks you're coming through the door or or he's just got to go to the bathroom or something, but he's been acting really weird for the last 2 hours, so I don't know. I don't know if he knows, like... You know, it's Monday night. That's when they record. It's this time. Where is he? Yeah. Like, so, but kind of weird.
He's going to come through the door in 3, 2, 1. One.
One and a half.
It's going to be like that episode of Futurama where when Fry went into the future and he found out the dog that loved him just stayed at the same spot till the day he died.
And that's really sad.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to bring up the podcast, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, you tend to have that. All right, Mike, I think we had a funny episode tonight, providing both guests come on.
Mm-hmm. That's always a big if.
And there's Obi. The instant I say we have a guest. Nothing has changed, whether you're
Did
here.
Did you accidentally show him a trick? It's like, Daddy's got a guest.
Guest. Guest. No, speak, you idiot. Speak. So we had a pretty funny episode tonight. Big time. I'm a huge Always Sunny fan. Mike, I know you watch the show pretty often also.
Feels weird that we haven't had a show this year yet. I know they held back a season with other projects, but
yeah,
usually Matt, around January, you're like, oh, it's coming.
And it's usually so fast. It's like, okay, it's like 10 episodes and it's over. But been a huge fan of Always Sunny for a very long time now. And Max on the show, if you don't know, Mac, Rob McElhenney is the creator of Always Sunny. His parents are hilarious. Okay, his dad's in jail all the time and trying to like kill him all the time, and then his mom is like a mess and she's like chewing tobacco and smoking all the time and just a really funny characters. We were able to get both of them.
Yeah, it was on a whim and all. Basically, when going out to Always Sunny actors, I was able to get his mom first, Sandy Martin. And then, you know, we were trying to schedule it. And out of the whim, like a few weeks later, his father, Gregory Scott Cummins, just go, I'm sorry, I've been away. Yeah, I'll do it. And if everything goes right, we schedule them both for today. And hopefully
we'll
pick up that phone. Yeah.
It's funny because I definitely have emailed Greg Cummings before too, like maybe like 2 years ago when we started coming up with like a list of who we wanted, and never got an answer. So, let's get Greg Cummings, aka Mac's dad,
Luther,
on the phone.
Hello.
Hey, is this Greg? Hello.
Hey. Greg?
Hold on one second. Hey, Greg, it's Scott Brennan and Mike Berlew from Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing?
I'm well.
First off, thanks for giving us a few minutes.
Absolutely.
I'm Scott, and you could hear Mike on the other line. Mike, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Scott. How's it going, Greg?
I'm good. You're Mike, and then you're Judd. So, okay.
Scott. Got it. Scott, but I can go by Jot, too. That's fine.
Is that John, did you say?
No, Scott.
Scott.
Yeah.
Scott, that's a really good name. That's like the second best name there is, because that's like my second name.
So, Greg, right. Where are you at right now? Where are we calling you?
I'm in Encino at my home in L.A. And just have a condominium here, you know. I'm not a big multi-millionaire or anything, but I'm comfortable.
That's awesome. Now, Greg, we were like before we introduced the show. Both Mike and I are pretty diehard Always Sunny in Philadelphia fans, and that's where we really kind of you know, ran into trying to get you on the show. We're like, you know, that'd be hilarious to
get Mac's dad
on the show. He plays such a funny character. I guess let's start there. How did you hook up with the Always Sunny crew?
Well, I had an audition that was set up through, you know, my agent. I have four or five different agents in the office. Just I have a middle ground agent. And they were just, you know, it was through AFTRA. They were not SAG. It was AFTRA, and they weren't paying as much initially. And they said, you know, it's for the show. It's just one day. And they were just paying the scale. And I was just going, oh, gosh, to do all that dialogue for one day. And she said, but I think you should do it. You know, I was like, not going to do it initially because I was getting a certain salary for my daily rate. I'm not a big star or anything, but I was getting more than scale. And they were just paying scale, but she said, you know, Danny DeVito just joined the show, the second season, and you really, I think you should do it for these guys. You just never know what can happen. It was just a one-show deal. And so I did the episode, and we just had such a great time with it. With the, I auditioned, I got the role, and then after, as we shot it, you know, I came and I kind of cut and dyed my hair, and I said I can slick it back and I can look, you know, older and I'll look mean and all that. But they said I look like just like Mac, only like 8 years older. And I said no. When I went to the audition, I greased it back and the eyes pop out. I had the goatee. I said, trust me, I'll look older. And they didn't trust it, so they put a little white into my beard and a little white into my hair initially, just so I would look older. And I said, I kind of look like Mac in real life, just a few years older. And I dyed my hair dark because that's the bad guy looks better with my hair dark. So I have my hair more light brown now, which is my regular color. And I played bad guys for years. So I just auditioned, did the thing. I came and did the thing for the show. And then the way I did it, you know, I just played it like really, like low key. And I played it like real dangerous. Real, I didn't play it for comedy. I just played like real low key, like I was like a really dangerous badass guy, and I'm looking at these two idiots trying to, you know, like Dad, I love you. It's so good to see you. And I just said, you know, okay, I'm just going to think he's a piece of shit. He's my son. I don't give a shit about him. So I'll just, and I just played that though, and they were just cracking up so much, and we were on the floor, and then Charlie was throwing out all these ad libs and stuff, you know, like in the butt stuff and all that in the audio. Because I had that line, "Do not come back here without anything up those asses." Okay, you know, and they liked it so much, they had me as a 6-time murderer, so they changed it, took out some of the dialogue that said I was a murderer, and made me a big drug dealer so I could maybe get released. So, and then they thought about writing me, say, you know, and I joked about it. I said, you know, sometimes these guys get paroled and they get released on cases that, you know, that are bad cases, and they get turned over. And they thought, you know what, we don't want him to be a murderer then if we're going to bring him back. And they just thought about bringing me back after the first time. You know, it was just they liked what we did, and it went well. And then they, you know, each season they didn't know if they were going to be picked up. So, you know, they wrote each season, and they went away and they did their writing. And so they just wrote an episode in for me the next season and the season after that. I think it was a two-parter, and they really got enjoyed with the heroin up the butt stuff and the, you know, and the, you know, what do you guys know about smuggling heroin through your anus, you know? And they just, you know, the way I did it, it just cracked them up so much. And so they did the little off take. That one was off of De Niro getting out of that one movie he did where he was getting out, and they thought I was going to kill him when I got out of jail. And so they just wrote this thing, and we did it for a while. And there's just been this little 3 or 4 year break as they went into other things. But they periodically had me back, and, you know, it's about 7 shows over a period of time. But it's just kind of amazing the feedback from all the
people. I mean, it's hilarious.
Under 30,
You do such an amazing job of being hilarious, but also frightening at the same time. Like, you look crazy when you do that role.
Yeah. Especially when I kind of get mad, I do the psycho eyes, you know. But it's just the way my eyes pop out if I get angry, you know. But in real characters where I'm playing it real, you know, then it's not so funny because I'm playing it like totally seriously. So I'm kind of overplaying it just a little bit, but it's still honest. It's still real. It's just I'm letting them do their comedy off me, and that's where the humor comes from, you know. And with a little sense of timing too, you know. Like with, you know, if they say, "Dad, can you do this for me?" and then I just kind of give that little deep pause and go, "No," you know, that kind of thing. You know, like just, you know, like, no, you know, just like I really don't care about you that much, but you know, we can get a car and we can do this, and I just toy with him, you know. But I'm just the way I always was. I just only cared about my son enough to get things I wanted for me, and that's kind of the way I played it. And they loved playing off of it, and they worked it for a while, and then he periodically had me back. And it's just my niece would go to like college at UC Santa Barbara, and none of them knew I was an actor, and I still had the goatee look a little bit with the shorter hair, though. But she didn't tell them anything, and all of a sudden they just like recognized me, and they started quoting my lines, and it's just like she said all the college students are watching the show, and it kind of got me in with a whole group of people that the newer people, because people I'd been working for 33 years, so, you know, people haven't even been alive to see the stuff that I did back in the early years, or even Cliffhanger with one of the big films. Most people were barely born then, so, you know, just things going back into the 80s and early and mid-90s, you know, people were just kids. So, yeah, so that's how it happened. It just through an audition through my agent.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, it's just amazing, your eyes, like, even, like, researching for her interview today, I was looking at images of you. There's some images that I'm like, okay, that could be my next door neighbor. And then I want to ask you how you act with your eyes like that, because there's some I'm like, oh my god, he's gonna jump through the screen.
Well, it's just a really funny thing. It's just there's a way of you know, it's just an intensity, you know, and I don't just do it physically where I you know, because I'm kind of a trained actor, and I'm not like a comedian, you know. I'm not somebody who goes up and stands on stage and does comedy. But, you know, for me, like, if I want to get mad at somebody, you know, you ever see those guys that, and then all of a sudden they get mad and their eyes just like pop up and they just open really wide and they're looking at you like with these crazy eyes. And I used to see people doing that. Well, and I just, when I get into roles, if I got really mad at someone, I mean really mad, and I got in their face, and then, you know, and then it was being filmed, and then you're looking at it back, and just the eyes are just like open as wide as they can be, and they just pop it, you know, and it's just, it's crazy eyes. So if you do that, and you're playing a comedy, and you do, because I did Step by Step and some other kind of shows when you were probably kids, where I played, you know, like a crazy gun dealer, and I would do that, and I go, I got this little secret gun. It's called a Saturday Night Special, you know, and I'm just looking at them like, just with the eyes just really popped open and a little smile there, you know, and it's kind of scary but funny at the same time, because it's kind of like Robert De Niro when he does comedy. He plays it real, but then he just plays a little heightened level. So he's playing honest, but he's just a little heightened level for comedy. I remember when he did that one thing with Billy Crystal, and it was just hilarious, where he played a mafia guy, but he was like crying all the time. But I forget what it was called. But
Now, with Always Sunny, like, we're not to stay only on that, but what is it like working with those guys? Is it even like work, or is it like it just looks fun?
No. I even said my first day in there, I said, don't tell my agent I said this, and I say it to him every time I get there. I say, this is what it was like when I was back in college doing theater and doing comedies and having fun and doing it for free and just having fun. That's why I got into the theater in the first place years and years ago. I got a master's in acting, and all that from UCLA and a bachelor's from Cal Berkeley. And you know, I just did it for fun. You know, I did it because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people in it. And I would do this show for free. I really would. I'd say it, guys. You know, I literally, this is something where I'd just come to the set and I'd work for free because I have so much fun. And I wouldn't do that with just about anything else.
Yeah.
But because we do have so much fun, it is just a fun fest every day working. And you know, it can be long hours, it can be exhausting, but working with those guys, every time they change a take up and they do, like Charlie, every time he does something new, I mean, you cannot, you can be the best actor in the world and try to not break. But I'm telling you, you've got to laugh the first time he does it because you're a fan of something really funny. And we would just, every other take, I would crack them up. Then we do it straight and we get one take. And then we do it again and then they change something and then I'd crack up. And then they do it again and I wouldn't crack up. I'd concentrate. And then we go a little further and then we do another take and they try something else and then I'd crack up because you can't. They're just throwing these hilarious stuff out there all the time. And they are like that in real life, too. I mean, they're just fun guys,
yeah.
You know, and you know, they're definitely serious about what they do. But, I mean, it's all, you know, it's just, we're just playing. It's just a lot of fun.
I mean, it really is. It comes across as that. I mean, it certainly does.
Yeah. How could it not be? It's like watching the Carol Burnett live shows and you see them. They're just having fun, and that's what it's like on this show. It really is.
Now, let me ask you: you looking at your resume? I mean, you've just been in like so many things that are that carry like a cult following around them, like or had a big run, like Murphy Brown and Walker Texas Ranger and RoboCop and Pacific Blue and Diagnosis Murder and Baywatch and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Time, like. Where did your roots start from? Like were you like I know you mentioned theater. Is that where you started?
Well, yeah, I started in theater in college. I was a football player in college. I played for Cal and University of Hawaii, but I did theater for fun, you know. So when the pro sports didn't work out at 25, I got released from the Chargers. I went back and said, well, this is the only other thing I really enjoy doing. So I took it seriously, finished my degree and got accepted to the UCLA Masters acting program.
Huh.
And I started treating it more seriously. But I did a lot of plays all the way through my 20s and teens and 30s. And I didn't start working professionally till 29 or 30 in theater. And then I knew I wanted to be in TV and film. So I just started doing a whole bunch, about 8 or 9 non-union films. He's just not even hardly getting paid just to get film on myself, because in those days we didn't have digital video, so you couldn't film your own demo reels and stuff and your own stuff. It looked like crap. And then I got myself an agent, worked myself up, and then I started doing better projects, and that's how it got going. It just, I enjoyed theater, and then I just started filming TV, and I just started working my way up slowly. I had no idea. There's no one way to get into the business. You just, everything you do, you just have to be good at it, and then people hear about it, and then more people hear about it, and then you audition, and more people hear, and then you get a decent agent and get you into some doors, and then you just try to work. So I played bad guys because I started later, and I could have played good guys, you know, kind of good looking kind of stuff when I was younger and stuff, but I was getting a little older, and so I wasn't competing with those 18 to 24 year old guys, and I just started growing my hair out long and growing the beard growth out a little bit, not the goatee, just some beard growth, and because I could support it acting, I just started playing bad guy characters, and I'd do Colombians and South Americans and Russians, because I was highly trained. And so I would just be this kind of chameleon working, and they would get to know me as a bad guy so much. And every time I would go and shave and cut my hair, you know, then I'd get maybe a nice guy role, or I'd play a gay queen or something like that or something. But the casting directors, they want to get you to know, when you're not a star, you just have to fit the niches. And they only think of you as the one thing they saw you do. They don't think, well, he's a talented actor, he can play anything. Because that's the way they think in theater, but they don't think that in TV and film. So you just kind of have to give them one thing. So I just gave them about 8 or 9 different looks when I was younger, and then as I grew older, about 8 or 9 different looks, different character types, the bad guy, psycho, you know, blue collar, tough guy, different things. And, you know, always took the nice shot, but I didn't get the nicer roles. At 6'4", for a recurring or running role in the series, nobody would stand next to. I couldn't get hired as a recurring or running role because, so as a bad guy, at least I could get hired being taller than the stars because they didn't mind the bad guy being taller.
Right.
So I worked as a bad guy a lot, and I grew the hair long, and I had all those, you know, mean looking white trash redneck Nazi looks, you know, the just the badass biker stuff or psycho crazy guy. And I got all those looks down, and then I can support them with the acting. And then I would go in auditioning with all these guys that really looked like that in real life. And I beat them because I had more experience acting. So
right.
I just worked all the time, but nobody got to know me by name, really, because I was always changing up and doing accents and showing up here and showing up there. And some people would recognize me. Oh, I saw this film, or I saw that film, or I saw... You know, you play the devil on Snoop Doggy Dogg's 1993 video of the year, you know, like Murder with the like that, or, you know, and they see and they recognize it. But you know, and it wasn't until recently that I went through some age transitions where I'm now clean shaven and I'm playing kind of, you know, detectives and FBI agents and, and this, you know, just, I'm getting, but I can still play bad guys too because my face has got more character to it without the fear.
You know, I was about to say, I mean, now with the, you have your role on Bosch, I mean, is it, when you get, being a Shakespearean actor, do you get bored kind of doing the same thing guy?
Well, I played bad guys for years, and it's always interesting. Sometimes if you're playing a similar type of bad guy over and over, you do get, but then you try to change it up. That's why, you know, you can do different things with accents, and you can play things different ways. You can make different choices. So you can make them, some of them more overtly tough guys, and some of them can be really dangerous. See, the more dangerous guy, are you more intimidated by the guy who's bellicose and yelling at you at a bar and acting really big and tough and putting his chest in your face? Or are you more afraid of the guy that just, like, looks at you like calmly and with a little smile on his face and say, you want to fight?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go outside. You know, which one are you going to be more afraid of? So, you know, it's like I learned, you know, what's more intimidating. But it's fun. I'm actually playing on Bosch, a role more like me in real life than any role I've ever played. So I'm actually having fun doing it. It's like I'm not even acting. It's like I'm just playing myself. Well, every character is a part of myself. So,
right.
But sometimes you have to, you know, concentrate and really... You know, work. It's very easy playing for this Bosch character because it's very very close to who I am. I'm kind of gregarious. I'm always joking about how good looking I am when I'm not, and it makes people laugh. And I've been doing it ever since I've been in the business. About just they say, "How you doing?" I'm pretty good looking, and it just works. You know, just how you feeling today? Good looking.
Well, it scares me that Luther, that you say all of them are part of yourself, and Luther's part of you. That's a little scary.
Yeah, well, you know, but the thing is, and it's funny, my mom used to always say, my son, he's really not like that, you know, she'd say to watch the movies, but she'd always say, you know, he's really not like that. He's a straight-A student. He went to Cal. He played football. He's an All-American kid. He's just, she's defending me, and I go, oh, but some people really do think that you're like that in real life. Some people who make the best bad guys are really nice guys in real life. But then some people, you get some people who are, you know, some bad guys that kind of are a little off in real life. But no, it's just a matter of training.
No.
We all have it inside of us. You have it inside of yourself.
Oh, I definitely do.
You know, try to imagine an acting exercise. If I took your mom, or do you have a younger sister or somebody you love, like a mom or a younger sister? So let's say I took your mom, and then I had you put in a room, and then you had to imagine her being tortured by someone, and have her toes cut off one by one, and then have her die a horrible, painful death. And you just try to imagine how angry that would make you, right? So you create that image in your mind, And then it doesn't matter whether you're going against another person, a guy or a woman or whatever. You just imagine that person did that to your loved one.
Now,
and all of a sudden, it puts you in a whole different mentality. And you know what? Everybody's got it in them. It's just whether you're willing to go there, you know. And right. and it's controlled. But it is, everybody's got it in them. You know, everybody's got a lot of things in them that they could do. But it's a matter of training to get it out.
Now, let me ask you something about the I want to ask you about the business of acting. Like, being an actor like you who has so many roles and done so many character parts and little parts here and there and bigger parts. How is that like, not, I guess not financially, but how is that living? Is it stressful, like trying to always find like smaller parts and piece them together for a full-time kind of life? Or is it kind of work itself out?
It was hectic because you're not going to make the big money. You're going to make maybe a little more money than the average guy because the casting director people know you and they know you'll do a good job.
Right.
But then you're not like a big name, which draws in crowds. So that's where the big money gets, when they like know who you are and they know your name. Then you get the millions and millions of dollars a picture. But if you're filling in the slots, you're fitting in, so they're paying you, and you get what you can get. But it's a lot of work running around, and your audition. Sometimes you come back, you get 2 weeks off, and you got like five auditions every week. So you're cramming on five scripts, you're reading the dialogue. And so it was the first 23 years was a lot of work. It was just constant. I was on sets like 7 months a year, all kinds of different projects, and then constantly auditioning when I wasn't working. And it was a lot. Now, I would have much preferred Fred Dreyer when I did The Hunter, and then I did The Return of Hunter later. He was always jealous of me. He said, "You get to play all these fun, interesting roles." And I said, "Yeah, but you like get millions of dollars a year, and you've done it for 9 years, and you never have to work a day in your life, and you can do anything you want." I said, "So, and you're well known, so you can basically go on a talk show or you can work or not work or whatever." I said, "You know, I that sounds kind of nice to me." I said, "You know, it's because I'm on the other end where I make a living. I made a living for 33 years, but it's a modest living. You know, so what I call a blue collar actor. I'm a blue collar actor. I make enough to make a living, and that really was all my goal. And you never know if you get in something that's going to get nominated for an MA or Academy Award or something. So you just keep doing what you're doing and just try to keep making a living. So yeah, it's been quite a it's hectic, it's crazy, but I've always had faith. I've always been kind of a calm guy from my sports years, so I don't get really up when I get something, and I don't get really down if I don't get something. I just try to do as good a job as I can in the auditions, and then you've done your job, and then it's up to them, you know. And I've had some great experiences traveling around the world and working with some great people, so you know, I can't complain. You know, and it's still going on, so who knows what's going to happen. But it's a different life for somebody who's a character actor who's fitting in, as opposed to being lead actors who, you know, the whole show's about you, you know.
So with that in mind, is there a character out there or something that you still feel you need to check off in your career that would make you happy, or something you're striving to do?
Oh, well, you know, I'm not, it's not like, you know, in theater, it was always everybody wants to do Hamlet and, you know, all that stuff. I've done all that stuff. It's just, there's so many characters to be played out there. It's just, I just want to do, you have the opportunity to do quality work with good people. And if that leads to where I'm on a running series and I start making a whole bunch of money, great. If it doesn't and I just get by, well, that's great too. If I get in a film and it makes a lot of money, then that's great. You just never know. It's just about the work. You try to work with good people and keep it interesting, and that's really what kind of keeps you going. If it were something where, you know, I was just, you know, if I ever got bored with it to where, because it's too hard a job to do if you don't like it. If it becomes a job, then it's really hard. Then you kind of want to work your way out of it. I mean, if it becomes so hard or you kind of don't like it anymore, you've got to enjoy the little things and the roles, the challenges, and all the things and the people you're working with, and each new role is a challenge. You know,
it's awesome.
Set every day, so it's something new every day.
So Greg, last question is a two-parter. So one, obviously, what kind of projects are you working on now? What can we look forward to seeing you in? And two, are we going to see Luther again? There's a lot of mystery.
Yeah, I sure would love to see Luther again. I love the guys. I think I did the 11th season. A little bit thing in it. The PTSD was the episode. They shot the 12th, I think, and that's going to air pretty soon. I think they've shot the 12th, or that's coming up to shoot this summer. I'm not sure. But then I also see, because when they were at the 10th, they got picked up for two more seasons, and I thought the 10th was going to be the last.
Yep.
And they said, okay, no, we got picked up for an 11th and 12th.
Mm-hmm.
But then now I see on IMDb that they've moved it off to the 14th. So maybe they're going to 14 seasons and not stopping at 12. So I don't know.
I guess you can't tell us if Dennis is back. I guess you can't tell us that.
Yeah. They haven't told me. It's all as you go. Okay? Mm-hmm. And they're figuring out every year. So they're writing the stuff. They're the ones writing the stuff. And I think they've gotten a few other writers over the years. So they take a little of the work off themselves.
Yep.
Because they were so good. Some of that first season. Oh, my God. That first season was hilarious.
There's so much brilliance over the years in that show. And
It's genius. I mean, they're just genius. The guys are just genius to put that together. And obviously bringing Danny in brought another element, and it brought his name to it too, which makes it a little more, a little more known for the older people. People have been around.
Right.
They I just don't know how they come up with all the ideas and all the stuff. And it's just, it's wild. But I think they could go on forever as long as, you know, it's making money and people and they're willing to do it. I know, Charlie's stretched into some movies.
Definitely.
Great movies. You know, he's just so funny. And I've seen Dennis do some other things. I even saw Rob do some things.
And Dee's got her own show, too.
They're all getting their feet wet in that stuff, and that's good.
What are we going to see you in coming up? What do you got going on?
Well, right now, I don't know when I'm going to come up on that. Bosch is set to shoot season 5 mid-July through November. And then for me now, it's usually a slow period this time of year. But I'm older now, so there are less characters. But I was just really close to the pilot episode of New Cagney and Lacey thing. I read for there's a young girl's going to, Lacey's going to be a black woman who's very physically adept, and a white woman who's Cagney, and I was going to play her father, who's divorced. But I auditioned for it. I was very close to getting it, and I just missed out. So, there's always, I'm just still competing for roles,
awesome,
just like everybody else, and nothing else is on the burner. It's just, I finished that. I had a little stint there where I was taking care of my mom here for a while, 24/7 around the clock, and she passed away just last May. Mm-hmm. So, it's just, so I was actually needing some time off to do that. So, I actually did turn some things down that weren't quality projects just because I needed to spend more time with her.
Right.
And now I'm more open to taking what comes along.
Awesome.
I just get better looking every year.
Well, that's true. That's definitely true.
And it's amazing. The guys on the show are so jealous because, I try, they try to make me look so mean and ugly, the makeup and all that stuff and all that. And it just doesn't work because I'm just still the best looking guy on set. And
absolutely.
They're just extremely jealous of it, you know, and they're extremely jealous. And I know when they haven't put me in seasons, it's probably because I was just too good looking and they were a little insecure. But
definitely,
I'm sure that I'll be back.
Definitely.
Maybe one more time.
It must be a Hawaiian punter thing, you know.
Yeah, I've heard exactly. that about them. Exactly. But, okay. Yeah, this is cool, though. I mean, so you've got this the podcast thing that you kind of go out to. It's like a kind of radio thing on the internet or something like that.
It's a weekly downloadable show. I mean, you could play it on the internet, but you could download it right to your phone or whatever listening device you do, and it comes out every Wednesday, and we've just really gotten to talk to some amazing people, and obviously including yourself. Like, I mean, just these last week we got to talk to John Snyder, who is Bo Duke on the Dukes of Hazzard. So just like,
oh god, yeah, okay. That's going back to the 80s.
Yeah. So we always have someone interesting on, and you know, thank you for giving us the time.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure if you were recording this to say this is what you're going to use, or if we were going to, you know, do a call and do a live thing. I wasn't sure. So I was just talking to you just like I'm talking to you on the phone here now. So is this all you need here? And then you just kind of put that into the show?
Yep, it'll be up on next Wednesday. So we'll put it up.
Oh, fantastic. So I was actually being recorded on that. See, I didn't
know. Yeah. We don't. Well, actually, fun news is that on this episode is also going to be your wife in Always Sunny, Sandy, is going to be on the show also. She's our next interview after this. So it's going to be an awesome episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and she just had that big thing come out with the three billboards. So, I mean, good Lord, gee. I mean, for a character actor to make it into a movie like that, just gets nominated for Academy Award, and she had a good supporting role that's memorable. You know, played the guy's mom. It's a great character she played, too. She was racist as hell.
Yep.
And, you know, so that was great exposure for her.
Yeah,
you know, that was a great film for her to be in.
Absolutely.
So, that's huge, and she's hilarious. She's just a wonderful person.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're very just the way things came together to get both of you on in the same episode. Just a really fun, you know, coming together
Yeah.
So it should be very promotable to Sunny fans in general. But you know, like, just it should be good. So we want to thank
that's
you
good,
so much.
It's good. Text me a little thing and just let me know what channel to check out on the internet. It's on the internet.
Yeah. Well, Mike will send you the link, and we'll send you where it can be downloaded and what you can tweet out
great.
And whatnot.
I didn't even know you were going to be taping. Just talk. I think how about you're kind of doing a preview talking about stuff.
You know? No. And, all recorded,
You know. But it's good just the way it came out.
We're very laid back. We just try to have a conversation. You know, like no one wants to hear these weird formal pre-planned interviews anyway. So, Gregory, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
I threw the good looking stuff in there too. Oh no.
Well, everybody sees it, obviously. But
well, everybody can see it. It's obvious. You should go to my Facebook. It's just constantly everybody's telling me how good looking I am, because I've told them for so many years that you don't have to say it anymore. They just call you Mr. Good Looking all the time.
Yeah, I have the same problem. I have the same problem. But
it's true. There are very few of us out there. There are very few of us. And it doesn't mean you have to be good looking. It means you just have to think you're good looking. And that's the key. You know.
Yeah, that's my role, thinking I'm good looking.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really all you have to do. And if you think you're good looking, that's your own little dream world, and I like it there. You know?
Greg, I want to thank you so much for coming on, and good luck with all.
Hey, it was a pleasure, you guys. Great to meet you. I look forward to listening to it, and I wish you the best of luck in everything. You guys are just fantastic.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it.
Really appreciate that. He was awesome, man.
Yeah. I think we have to have more interviews where they don't think we're taping them.
Yeah.
I think that's the key.
Dude, how bad would that suck if we pre-interviewed you for 40 minutes and then was like, okay, now we're going to do 3 minutes on the air. Go.
Yeah. I have a thesis about Cliffhanger I want to throw by you.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. It's funny how, like, I mean, you could definitely tell how much fun they have with those roles, man.
Mm-hmm.
Something as crazy as that, how can you not laugh? especially with Charlie like doing things in front of you. I just don't think it's possible. Or Danny DeVito, like those characters are so ridiculous.
I mean, and you look at it, all these people who play these roles are getting huge things. One of the McBoyles, they're doing the Unsolved, the Biggie Small Tupac miniseries.
Yep.
One of them was on The Walking Dead. What was his name? I had to look it up. He got killed off like a couple seasons ago.
Irony Singleton. Yeah, we had him on the show.
No. There was. I'll look it up.
You know, Irony Singleton from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
See, Obi even said no.
But anyway, that was Gregory Scott Cummings, and on to the next guest. It's time for our second guest, and
guest number two.
It doesn't get better than pairing. This is the first time we've ever had a pairing that goes perfect. Well, no, the Coheed guys. We had them on one episode, so we had Travis and Josh of Coheed on one episode. But other than that, like I guess like the NASCAR, the IndyCar one, we had a bunch of IndyCar drivers. Yeah. But
The Miller brothers,
yeah, the UFC fighters. But yeah, so this is a rare episode where we get to pair two actors together that play each other's significant other, or at least Mac's parents in Always Sunny. So we have Sandy Martin coming on the show. And Sandy's been in a million things.
Yeah, more recently, the three billboards from Ebbings, Missouri. Won tons of awards. Sam Rockwell won Best Supporting Actor. She played his mother in it.
She's just a good mother. A good mother.
Yeah.
But she's been in all sorts of things from Nip Talk to Napoleon Dynamite, Big Love, Marley and Me. Just a bunch
CSI.
Of
CSI.
Yeah, just a bunch of hits. So we're going to get Sandy Martin on the line.
Hey.
Hey, is this Sandy?
Is this Michael?
Hold on one. Hey, yeah, this is Scott Brennan and Mike here on the other line. So Mike, say hi.
Evening, Sandy.
Hi, how are you? I'm sorry I missed the caller's name. What's your name?
Oh, I'm Scott. We're dealing with, this is all new setup for us. We got Mike in Georgia, I'm in New Jersey, and Sandy, where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
So there you go. We are covering a good chunk of the United States here. But, Sandy, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes, and we really appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure. I've never done one of these, so you got to direct me.
Oh, well, we're just going to talk.
Well, Scott, let me get the most important question as I was going back and forth with Sandy on emails. Sandy, were you able to get out jury duty?
Ooh.
Yes, I was. I phoned enough times, and they finally just said, "You're done for the year." And I was like, I did a happy dance, I'll tell you that.
She might be the only person that can say, I can't do jury duty. And why is that? I'm going to the Oscars.
Yeah, well, the Oscars were on a Sunday, so that wasn't wrong.
They don't know any better. People get off for way worse reasons than the Oscars. Like, you know, they come up with every excuse. The Oscars is a good one. But, Sandy, like, I wanted to start. Really, the main reason that brought us to try to get you on the show, me and Mike are both very into Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Been a show I've been watching for years, and you obviously play the hilarious role of Mac's mother. And what's really cool about this episode is we had Greg on right before you, so we're actually going to have both of you on in one episode. So we're going to have Mac's mom and Mac's dad on one episode. So we're really happy about that. So
how good, that's great.
So how did you get involved with the Always Sunny crew? That's the first thing I asked him too. How'd you get involved with them?
Well, I was walking through Elysian Park with my dog and my friend from New York who played my son 20-some years ago. And he ran into a very friendly, nice couple who turned out to be Charlie Day and his wife, Mary Elizabeth.
Yep, the waitress.
We, the waitress, and we started talking dog for a second, and as we were politely saying goodbye, he said, "By the way, were you in Napoleon Dynamite?"
Nope.
And I said, yeah, I was. And he goes, "Wow, you know, we have this little show, and it's just getting off the ground, and we wondered if you would come meet us about one of the mothers." And I said, sure. So I happened to be in the right place at the right time walking my dog.
Even the way you're saying that, you kind of sound like Charlie coming. You're like,
here, I'll do a better imitation of him. Anyway, and that first pilot episode we shot in Philadelphia, and that was my son on the show's real house. So that was pretty amazing. Anyway, then they moved us all to L.A.
You've been acting for so long. And when you, we were talking with Greg how they love, like, ad-libbing scenes and everything. Is that something you had to get used to, or is it just so natural working with those guys on the set?
I love that kind of show. In the old days, I was with Second City for 3 years in New York and Chicago. But, I don't go into panic mode when I have to improvise. I love it. You know, actually, there was a scene I did with Jeffrey Tambor on Transparent, and Jill Soloway likes improv too. So I said, don't worry about it. If you know what's going on in the scene, just express yourself. And that was a blast. So I always feel very relaxed on the set of It's Always Sunny because of that. And, I usually know everything down pat, but if we can get away with a few little ad-libs here and there, that's cool too.
I mean, how much fun is it to play Mac's mom? I mean, you're like this quiet, grumpy, smoking, racist, like just hilarious character. Every scene you're in is funny. Like, there's no seriousness with Mac's mom in the show. Like, every time you come on, there's generally laughter. It's got to be a blast playing that character.
I love playing Mrs. Mac. I mean, from the first show where I say, yeah, hey, I'm not attracted to you.
Yeah, with Dennis.
I think it all started for me in the late 70s. I did a play where I played this really kick-ass, rowdy, drinking, smoking, party animal in a play I did. And I got so much response from kids and people my age and everything going, oh, I have an Aunt Ellie like you dancing around with a lampshade on her head, So I luckily seem to have risen to be the queen of Kooky Krusty, and it's mainly with teenage boys, or men, the girlfriends look at me like I'm gonna hock a loogie and spit it in their purse, but men are really cool. They always want pictures of me. Anyway, I have a really good time playing that character. It's just that, I think I'd really scared some people with that character. But I don't care.
Yeah. And I also say I love the way you play off with Lynn Marie Stewart, who plays Charlie's mom. And it seems like you two have, like, natural chemistry together with the two different acting styles there.
Yeah, well, she's a Barbie doll wannabe airhead, and she gets in here with the horror story of the block. Luckily they wrote an episode that I burned my own house down.
Yep. Just watched that the other night, by the way.
Smoking. And every time I do that show, I got to go with withdrawal for like 2 or 3 weeks. Get over all the smoking I do in that show, but
what
everybody always me, "Oh, do you really smoke in real life?" And I said, "I'm trying not to." And then, you know, they do 20 takes of me going, you know, I have to smoke one cigarette after the other. But anyway, I have a great time and I love doing the show. And, you know, I guess we're on for a couple more seasons, knock wood, but, you know, I hope we go out with a big family bang of some sort, because they have so many great characters on there.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do. Yeah. I mean, the whole show is just great character. That's what makes the show, is all the characters. So let's go into your career a little bit. Where did you get your start in acting? Were you, like, classically trained or theater, or did you just pick up a role somewhere? Where did you start?
Well, I started really, really young. I went to, like, you know, a little local art center and took acting classes there. But actually, there's one other actress that I met there that became quite busy in the business as well, Diane Salinger. And two of us, who would have thought? I played the father in Cheaper by the Dozen. And she played my oldest son. So now
what?
She plays all these weird, you know, voodoo mamas and scary people. You can Google her after we talk, but, you know, and then I became Mrs. Master. But I did some theater there, and then I moved to New York, and then I did at least 70 plays before I moved to L.A. Wow. Huh. So I just went from one to the other, and but most of them were off Broadway, and, you know, I mean, in one play, it was an Andy Warhol play, and I had the diarrhea out of a bowl. So that'll tell you how versatile my career is.
That's great, because I could still see a Ms. Mack doing that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was the same play that Sally Kirkland wrote a pig nude across the stage. So anyway, it was just a really diverse, you know, I did a lot of classic things, but I did mainly, you know, straight plays, comedies, you know, I did a lot. And then the American Academy of Dramatic Arts saw a lot of productions I was in, because I graduated from school. So they said, how would I like to come to California and direct some of what they call exam plays? So I said, yeah, I'd come out here. And, you know, I bought a $300 car at Vaughn's parking lot, and it had caught on fire, but I didn't care. It ran. and I just slowly but surely, you know, kept teaching at that school. It was a great way to crack, you know, Hollywood, and also be paid a salary doing something I really enjoyed. And to this day, I still teach when I can here and there at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, but they gave me a chance. And then I ran into some Second City friends, and they were having a show, and they gave me a little role on that. Well, I was a little guest star, but anyway, it just, you know, I've done so many little bits on everybody's TV shows until they discovered how weird I am. Now I have a slew of bag lady guest stars. You know, so I'm trying to get out of that rut in a little bit. You know, I can't dress up here and there, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
When you're working, I mean, you've done a lot of different, as you were saying, different TV series, different roles. We kind of brought this up with Gregory. Is it kind of rewarding, or are you sitting back going, okay, I'm getting constant work, or does it get a little tiring where it's not like a constant series or like a blockbuster movie where you have to go from set to set and audition to audition?
Well, yeah. I mean, the day they pull those auditions, you know, that'll be a big shock, because, I mean, you have to audition most times, even, you know, name actors audition. you know, I would like to, you know, because I've been doing this since I was 15 years old, I would like to be a tiny bit more selective, you know, and it just depends. But I have really enjoyed the roles I get. I don't know if you ever saw Big Love, but, you know, I played that murdering Mormon who was, you know, dressed totally in drag. And that I used to clear aisles in supermarkets when people discovered I was Thelma Green from Big Love. but I also, you know, I get a lot of emotional roles too, because I guess I have that, you know, skill to do it. And it's what I try and say to my students at the Academy: if you're not moved, nobody else is going to be moved. So, you know, it just has to come with the package. I don't know if that answered your question, but
definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Now let me ask you, do you how has the passion changed for you since, like you said, starting the '70s to now? That's an insane amount of time acting. Do you still have the same passion, or do you still have the same interest, or does it feel different at all? Like, how would you describe your feeling towards acting? You've been able to do this for so long.
Well, you know, even though, you know, I used to preach to my students, you know, versatility is the name of the game, and if you can't do that, you're going to be just too limited, and good luck. You know, so I loved all the versatility and all the things. I mean, I finally had to say, no more prison wardens, no more prison. I'm out of prison for life. I mean, unless it was a series like Wentworth or something, where, you know, that woman is the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if you've ever seen that series, but wow. you know, if the right stuff hits, like Max Mom is light years away from that murdering Mormon. And, you know, I mean, I like that part of it, that it's versatile. But I must say, after doing 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, I'm really into, you know, playing funny, emotional, weird, you know. And I've met my lucky charm, Martin McDonagh, in that regard. You know, he's a renowned playwright. He knows I have an extensive background in theater, so I think he trusted me. I don't know if you heard the story of how I got that role, but
no.
I don't want to segue out.
No, go ahead.
Talk about. I'm sorry?
No, yeah, go. How did you get that role?
Well, I auditioned for 7 Psychopaths, and there was an opening scene where my son, who was a big crook, gets murdered, and it was an opening scene of a funeral, and I was so hysterical, all I did was pound on Woody Harrelson's chest and go, I want him dead, kill him, I want him dead. You know, and I went on and on and on, but it was a big crime scene. But it was pathetic at the same time. And then he finally just says, I'll kill him, all right, get the fuck off me. And he, like, shoves me backwards, and I go careening around. And, you know, I almost fall in the hole where my son is buried. And it was really a fun scene to do. Anyway, I think they had a lot of laughs over that, and they enjoyed it. But Martin wrote me finally. I don't even know how he got my email address, but he wrote me and said, oh, Sandy, it kills me to tell you this, but after all your wonderful work, you know, in that funny scene, they want to just get right to the murder, and they don't want to open with the funeral. So I was out. I was out of that film, and I said, oh, no. I mean, the only reason I love doing that is because I've seen all your plays, and I admire you as a writer. You're the master of black comedy, and that's my favorite genre in the whole world. And he goes, well, don't worry, we'll work again. And I went, yeah, blow some more smoke up my ass. You know, I mean, I really, yeah, I mean, I say that crassly, but I nobody's ever come through on that promise before.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, boom, next thing I know, like 2 years later, I get an email from him, and he goes, hey, would you like to be in my next film? I really would like it. And I was like, what? Can it be? You know, and it was true. He remembered it. He looked me up. He gave me that wonderful role of Sam Rockwell's mother, and I just had the time of my life playing that role. And opposite for Sam was a piece of cake. We hit it off really quickly. So it had a real happy ending. You know, I first was cut out, and then I was pasted back in.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the movie. I mean, it was an amazing story all the way through. When you get on a set like that, does it feel different, or does anything change from the aftermath? Is there any way to really tell? It's like, all right, we're gonna win all these awards if you're acting across the next outstanding supporting actor. Does any of that click when you get on there, or is it just another set?
Can I shut my dog up for a second?
Oh, yeah. Sure. I do it every week on the podcast. You'll probably hear my dog in a few minutes.
Jose, I can't talk right now. I can't.
You guys want
to? All right. Thank you. Stop. Please stop. Okay. Sorry, guys.
No,
so what was the vibe on the set like?
Yeah, it doesn't feel any different, or can you tell, like, okay, this is going to be huge?
Well, first of all, he lets you have a lot of lead time going into it, and that is such a blessing, because in this day and age, you know, you have to be in an audition at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then you only got the script at 5 o'clock the night before, and then, oh, we like you, we like her, let's shoot tomorrow, you know, and it's like, what? You know, it's like, but Martin McDonagh does it the good old-fashioned way. He casts very carefully. He handpicks who he wants, and he gave us at least a 6 weeks to 2 months lead time before we had to shoot. So therefore, you get really, really, you know, into that character and really start exploring with it and having a good time with it and finding the humor and finding the drama and finding everything. And you know, it's just the most ideal place to work ever. And that was a very relaxed set. Everybody knew their stuff. Nobody was freaking out, at least that I knew. Everybody was just, and it's because they had that time to marinate what was going on. So, and then when he showed me the screenplay of Three Billboards, for 10 years I produced with a very big company here called Esparza Cast Productions. And then I went over to ABC and I ran Edward James Olmos' office as his president for 4 years. So believe me, you get used to reading like 1,000 scripts a year and you're looking for a diamond. And I read that screenplay and I went, oh my God, this is such a great screenplay. This can't fail. I almost felt the same way about Napoleon Dynamite. I thought it was funny and clever and, you know, but this one really knocked me right off. And I wrote him a long letter of what I loved about it. And he's very communicative. I mean, you know, he gets back to you. He wanted to have lunch before we shot. And he doesn't say much. He just goes, tell me how you are as Mama Dixon. What are you? And you have to sit there over a poached perch trying to, you know, come up with some brilliant things about your character. But, you know, it was great. It was great. I mean, I just said, well, you know, she's jealous of him and she can't live without her baby boy. And she's racist. And he goes, well, why do you say that? And I go, well, can't you get rid of that black guy? You know, lies like that. It was so funny because many, many years ago, people asked me, was there any kind of role that you would never do? And because I spent most of my, you know, from 15 on in New York City, you know, I said, well, I never want to play a racist because now I'm seeing the world and everything is like a film living in New York City. And I get it now. And of course, the first great role that I have is a racist. But opposite Sam Rockwell was amazing. We only met for, you know, 1 hour before we shot, and that was in a dialect coach meeting.
Wow.
So we weren't even, you know, like doing any kind of performing or anything. We were just trying to get that accent down, you know. And he said, are you really going to be that funny? And I said, well, I'm not doing anything with you. And he's funny all the time. So it was a great combo. We've gotten a lot of compliments as mother and son, I must say.
Now, what is it like seeing a film like that that you believed in, like you said, from the beginning, you read the script, and to see it get what it's due, like to get the awards, to be recognized among the Academy? Are you sitting at home rooting for it? Are you paying close attention to it? Are people text messaging you and emailing you? What was that scene like?
Well, I think that a lot of actors in this cast, they're either real newbie teen stars, and they're not, you know, they were the coolest guys, you know. they were very laid back and relaxed.
Right.
Frances McDormand, you know, is an amazing actress and couldn't be more generous and kind and nice, you know. Woody Harrelson, I didn't have much contact with him because I don't have any scenes with him. Frances had a party for all of us right before we shot, so that was nice. No, it was right before we had the London premiere. I had never really met her. We had only shot without her, but, you know, they weren't like going, yee-hoo, you know, we're going to win an Academy Award. They weren't those types at all because we've been in the business so long. But, of course, when people started recognizing Francis's performance and Sam Rockwell's amazing performance as well. I mean, everybody, it's like anything else. It was word of mouth that was selling that picture. And that was fantastic because, I mean, we all agreed when we read the script, we went, oh my God, what a great story full of twists and turns, and it was a page turner. I mean, it was really, really juicy. And I think actors are always drawn to that. But anyway.
Now,
since it's got all the hype, it's got all the awards, do you instantaneously see like new different roles that are provided to you, or is it?
You're kind of sounding like Aquaman.
Yeah, you sound underwater. Say it again, Mike.
I was just asking that now that it's got all the awards and everything coming out, have you gotten like new roles provided to you that you haven't gotten in the past, or are you seeing kind of the same old? Has anything really changed after this?
Well, it's kind of, you know, recent, all this. I mean, I did a little cameo in London for Tim Burton's movie Dumbo, and I played a bossy secretarial pool pusher called Burma.
Nice.
And that's, I mean, he and I go back from the 80s. We used to hang out, and yeah, anyway, it was a wonderful experience. And I played a very pushy secretarial lady who scares the hell out of Danny DeVito. So that was very relaxed set because he was, you know, there. and I was there, and we, you know, we knew each other. So, you know, since the movie's come out, you know, we've been so busy with publicity and all these festivals and all the, you know, the Producers Guild Awards and the Directors Guild Awards and the Writers Guild Award, and they always invite me, and I'm like, I brought out of clothes, leave me alone.
It'd be great if you showed up in character as Mrs. Mack at one of those award shows.
Yeah, that would have been funny. Well, even Frances McDormand, when I saw her a couple nights after the Oscars, she said, "Don't congratulate me, I'm sick of it." That's making me laugh. Anyway, I mean, it's so busy. You know, I snuck in a guest star on a show called The Shooter with Ryan Felipe, but, you know, I mean, they're kind of like, oh, good, she's that crazy mother from It's Always, you know, not It's Always Sunny, but that combined with, you know, you want me to, you got any friends you want me to fuck over? I mean, you know, people are like, well, let's try and get her for fuck things. So we'll see how it goes. But so many people commented on that turtle. Oh my God, that turtle. Did you see the turtle crawl into my lap?
I saw that. I remember
that. Now, before we go, Cindy, like, where, like, what do we have to look forward to see you in coming up, or what are you working on now? And, like, where can people go to say hi to you or check out some of your work?
Well, I have a really juicy website because my nephew is in the business, and we put a lot of funny stuff on there.
Yep.
So that's at sandymartin.com, you know, www.sandymartin.com, and I have the latest stuff up there. This whole whirlwind only shut down last Sunday, and so I'm kind of taking a little break and having some home construction done on my house.
Nice.
That's why the guy was knocking at my door. He wanted to talk about something, and I'm like, get out of here. I'm on the phone. But anyway, you know, people can get in touch with me. On my website, it has a contact number, sandy@sandymartin.com, and I for the most part get back to them with something, a couple sentences here and there. But, you know, what can I say? I our characters in It's Always Sunny, I thought were very, very funny. So
we do too.
Like, spin off on not the show, but I took Lynn Marie Stewart with me, and we have it's called it's not really a pilot. It's a proof of content is the correct word. And we made a 20-minute funny thing where she kicked me out of her house. And we're more or less our same characters, except our names are Ginger and Gert. And the name of the show is called Over and Out.
All right.
Nice.
At some point, you gotta. I have your email. I don't have yours, Scott, but yep. I do have Michael's. But I'll send you a clip of that because it's really kind of funny.
I'm sure it is. I can see it.
Basically, the pitch is: what do you do when you're kicked to the curb and you're in your mid to late 60s and you don't have any patience left? You're a cranky old lady, and what are you gonna do for a job? So,
now,
but I would love to hear what your feedback is. So
I would love to see it.
Your email, I'll send it to you.
100%. Mike, do you have one more question?
Yeah, same. I mean, it's been really fun talking to you and everything. Just out of curiosity, do you plan to keep on going with acting in the future? Do you see yourself having a retirement date? What is there any end to the fun you're having on screen?
You know, is this Michael?
Yeah,
that's Mike, yep.
You've tried to retire me 3 times in this podcast. What's your story?
No, I mean, that'd be a hell of a story for me if I did it, but I don't want to.
Mike Berlew, retired Sandy Martin.
let's do pilot retired. Well, he does sit there and curse at the television. Anyway, I would like to have a little selectivity because, I mean, I'm not going to say something that's going to, you know, trash my guest star career, but I have guest starred a lot. So, you know, I mean, I'd like to find some great roles that I really, really love and continue that way. You know, but I don't like sitting here, you know, on my couch either. So, you know, I have to create my own stuff as well. So that's why I did Over and Out. And I think you'll find it funny. You know, it's, you know, but so far it's, you know, I don't want to get these guys in trouble, but I asked the Fox people if they'd be interested because I have Fox as my studio between Napoleon Dynamite and, you know, It's Always Sunny and now, you know, 3 Billboards. I mean, you know, would they be interested at all? And I'm not talking a full blown series, you know, like the Golden Girls, because this is the demented Golden Girl. You know, these are the real, you know, scraping by the seat of their pampers people. And, you know, but I think it's very funny. And my generation, I mean, who would have thought I would ever be this old anyway? I mean, I've had a lot of perky, fun, you know, roles that I've played in my life. And now, just because I'm getting older doesn't mean I'm going to pull down the tent poles.
Yep.
You
yep.
know? Mm-hmm. So I think it would be funny that these two old ladies or just one of us, and she can have an episode or two herself, you know, just appear. And I'd love your suggestions if you have any place we could go pitch that, you know, where, hey, you want to see Ginger and Gert? It's only 15 minutes long and they beat the shit out of each other, you know, or, you know, and I think people would tune in for that because everybody has a funny grandmother. Everybody has, you know, an aunt that curses like a sailor. I mean, they do.
Yep. Well,
and they don't represent it. And I want to represent them.
Well, I mean, that's what it comes down to. I'm like, even like Mrs. Mack, we've all seen Mrs. Mack in real life somewhere. So that's why it makes it so funny, you know, because we've all had that. But, Sandy, I want to thank you so much for giving us some time. It's just really cool to talk and hear just how many different things you've done and kind of how you have a great sense of humor about it and you're still, you know, hungry. And it's very inspiring. So I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes on the show.
Well, thank you guys for pushing through because I really was kind of busy and that jury duty thing was making me mad and horny. And I was hoping to be through blue to you, but I just couldn't arrange a date because they, you know, if you get chosen, you get chosen. And you,
absolutely.
Anyway, it was a pleasure talking to both of you and thank you for the opportunity as well. It's always enlightening to meet some young bunnies who think you're funny.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
I had 2 more retirement questions after that, though. I got chewed out my Mac smile. That's awesome.
He's like, are you done trying to get me to stop acting?
I never said stop. I just brought up... It's a long career, Bucket.
Well, yeah, what a fun coincidental episode, I should say.
Absolutely.
So, I guess let's just get out of here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Berlew, anything to promote while you're down in Georgia? Glitter beer?
What's that? No glitter beer I'll promote, but maybe another week because I like those people. They like me. I'll just do my page, facebook.com/TheBerlew721.
Sign of Walking Dead. I've been getting some feedback from certain people. They've been enjoying it. Show's been pretty decent so far. So when it's good, it gets better for my kind of writing. So Facebook.com/TheBurl721.
All right, guys. And I want to just promote ourselves. Just get out there on the Instagram and Twitter. Make sure you check out our Facebook for upcoming comedy shows, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
I can't hear that, so...